This is Equestrian Legacy Radio's Campfire Cafe, and I'm your host, Gary Holt. We have a great show today. We're going to be visiting with Dave Stamey, multi-award-winning singer-songwriter out in California, and then we'll travel back across the country to South Carolina and visit with Marietta Gambrill, a 60-year veteran and trainer and teacher of the connection between horse and human. So we have a great show today. And the Campfire Cafe is brought to you by our sponsors at the General Store and at the gallery at East of Santa Fe. You'll find everything for the horse lover and folks that love the equestrian lifestyle in the General Store and the gallery at East of Santa Fe at our website, equestrianlegacy.net. So grab a cup of coffee, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Dave Stamey.
Time morning, the far hills show traces of snow. The day come dawning, like rim rock, where junipers grow. Ah, this country is a friend of mine. Its voice is the voice that I hear, and when time leaves me behind, I won't mind if it leaves me right here. Sweetgrass County line, down where the Everstone flows, sunlit waters shine. Old railroad bridge, cottonwoods grow. Ah, this country, how it takes you in to a sky so open and clear. And when time comes to an end, I won't mind if it ended right here. Thunderstorm afternoon rain, just like a summer dream. Once you've seen it, you're never the same. Ah, this country, how it calls to me, its voice, how it rings in my ear. And when the light finally falls on me, it's alright if it falls on me here. Ah, this country is a friend of mine. Its voice is the voice that I hear. And when time leaves me behind, I won't mind if it leaves me right here.
That is Sweetgrass County Line by Dave Stamey, and Dave is a three-time Entertainer of the Year, three-time Male Performer of the Year, two-time Song of the Year with the Western Music Association, and he has received the Will Rogers Award from the Academy of Western Music. Dave Stamey, I've been looking forward to having you on the show. Welcome, my friend.
Thanks for having me, Gary. Appreciate it. It's a pleasure.
Well, we have been looking forward to this for some time, and we're just excited to share your music and maybe tell folks a little bit about you that they didn't know before, because you've got quite a background with horses. And can you tell us a little bit about how you got started and what that involvement has been?
I got started when I was about 4 years old. My dad threw me up on one and says, "Follow me, boy." And that's kind of how it was. And It's and I've been a throw a leg over and ride guy ever since. I grew up in the ranching business, and we used horses quite a bit, and so it's been a long old haul with them.
Well, the horses are great, and you know, we'll talk about this in a little bit. I'm sure they probably have influenced your music to some extent, but you know, it was really interesting talking with you the other day. You've done a little bit of everything with horses. You've been a cowboy. You've been worked on a dude ranch. I was interested about this mule packing stuff.
Oh yeah, I worked for various outfitters over the years in the last 30 years in the eastern, mostly eastern Sierra area of eastern California, and that's kind of my bailiwick, and I've spent a lot of years dragging mules up the trail in various jobs, whether it's helping tourists get up to the high country or doing contracting packing work for the Forest Service or various trail crews and projects out there. I've spent a lot of years doing that and looking between a horse's ears at a trail. So it's
right. Well, I know, and if you spend a lot of time on horses, you probably have some stories that you could tell about some of the experiences that you've had. And, you know, some of them you could probably even share on the radio.
As long as I don't have to go into the language use, maybe. Of course, now that you ask me that question, every story I know about has just immediately left my head. I can tell you about some, you know, infamous buck offs and things like that, but that's not a really good subject, except to say that sometimes in the ranching world and in the outfitters world, the animals you end up with in your string or in your herd are generally, they're there because they didn't quite fit somewhere else. There's a hole in them somewhere. And
right.
The challenge in any case is to find where that hole is and see if you can work around it. And so that's been a lot of my experiences with with horses. And in the dude business, which I was in for 15 years, I worked at the Alisal Ranch there in the San Ynez Valley of California for 13 years, and I helped them run their horse program there. And there was 128 head of horses that we had to take care of, and the new ones coming in, and other ones, you know, getting called out as things developed. And what's interesting to me is when you put a horse in a herd situation, a new herd situation, where you take these new horses, and we'd have them in quarantine for a couple of weeks to make sure they weren't carrying, you know, some kind of strangles or some darn thing like that, which
right.
has happened. And then you'd throw them in the herd, and it's kind of like throwing a kid into a schoolyard. You know, there's cliques and there's bullies and there's a hierarchy, there's a pecking order, and it takes a while for those horses to find out what their place in the pecking order is, and it will take them up to a year to settle in to a large herd situation, and the holes that they may have in their training or in their attitude will often not show up until after that year is over.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
wow.
Once they find their place in the herd, then they can turn their attention back to the evil human who has put them there. I don't mean to come across like my experiences with horses have all been antagonistic. They certainly have not. But that's just one thing that I have learned over the years, and it's quite interesting, the psychology of that wonderful animal.
Well, it really is. You know, that reminds me. For quite some time, I ran about 24 broodmares and had three or four stallions. And I recall when you were talking about that pecking order, Dave, it reminded me of a little mare that I bought. And when she came home and was put out with the other mares, she was at the bottom of the pecking order. And about 2 months later, that totally reversed. It was just amazing to watch that transformation. And sometimes it does take a while before that happens, but it's interesting to watch the way that horses interact with each other and how things can change. And, one of the things that was interesting in your bio, and it was kind of, I just had to ask this question. It said you've delighted audiences across the United States, and we're very much aware of that. But it said that you find that you prefer that to being stomped by angry horses. Now, there had to be some episode there that kind of.
Oh, there's a number of them. I remember. the assistant barn manager and I were—we had a couple of horses, a new bunch that we were taking out, and Mark was his name, and he had ridden this one horse the day before, and so I climbed on him, and we're going to go out and do another little what we used to call smoke run, and it was one of those things where you have to ride these things for a week or better before you can get a handle on them and figure out where they are and are they safe? Do we risk putting a guest on them? Do we rent them out, or what do we do here? Do we camp on them as wranglers? You know, put a wrangler on it and camp on it until things develop. And so anyway, out we were, and Mark told me one. He says, okay. He says, I tried this horse yesterday, and we'll try a little lope here. He says, David, he kind of bobbed his head and acted like he wanted to buck, but then he just kind of spurred me, just right on out of it. I said, okay, that's fine. And I had been in situations like that before. I knew exactly what he was talking about, and so we queued up, and there we went, and queued everybody, and off we loped, and sure enough, he did bog his head and act like he was going to try and buck me up, but he did not respond to the ride right out of it part. And before I knew what had happened, he had swallowed his head, and I was kind of doing battle, and Mark says, hollers at me, pull his head up, Dave. And I'm going, at that point, he might as well have said, do an algebra problem. Because for all the good it would have done me, because I was slammed and stomped as he ran over the top of me. And I'll tell you what I have found is that after the age of 30, one no longer bounces. The ground gets increasingly hard year after year. And I was at that point, I think I was 38 or 39, and well over the age where one looks for that sort of activity. But, you get that quite a bit. And another situation, I had one blow up on me crossing a creek, and I have a friend of mine who ended up working on the Spanish ranch, and he said, out in Nevada, he says that still rates up there as one of the most amazing bronc rides I ever saw. And I could not take credit for it. I mean, this horse had his head down, his mouth was open, and he was braying like a hog. I mean, he was just the whole thing. Oh, he really meant it. But the problem was, I didn't want him to buck me off there. I was in a creek bed. It was dry, and there was nothing but rocks. And then at the point where I thought, maybe I do want to get off, he kept bucking up underneath me, and he kept me on. I don't know if you've ever had that happen to you, but it's not one of those things where he was calculating doing it. It just worked out that way. I mean, I was looking for a way out toward the end. I'm going, I need to get off this thing. But he kept me up there and just beat me and beat me and beat me. And finally, I did. I just bailed off. It was a little bit too much. Yeah, so that one took me a little while to get over. Not because I hit the ground. That was the least of it. He just kept me up there and wham, wham, wham. So anyway, that being said, yes, I do enjoy performing on stage with a guitar as opposed to that sort of activity.
Oh, that is way understandable. You know, it's one of the fun things about the show that we do is so many of our guests are people that are horse people, you know, the musical guests, the musical artists, or horse people have some kind of background, some extensive first experience that anybody shared like that one. But that's pretty,
well, maybe they didn't
cool.
want to, yeah, because you have to admit that you actually came off, and you don't really, you know, that's often not.
Well, that's true. I've we talked about our friend Whitey Mitchell a while ago that you'll be performing with later this month, and
yes.
He never did talk about coming off of a horse, but I'm pretty sure that's happened, you know, with Whitey in the past.
Oh, I'm sure it has. Matter of fact, I know it has, but we won't go there. Now, to put a nice hat on everything, I will say that right now in my early middle years, as you would say, I hope that they're my early middle years, I'm happily involved with a couple of horses here on the place that are just wonderful, and I couldn't be happier with them, and they're good partners, and they've never given me a lick of problems, and so not all my horse stories are bad ones. The last few years have been, the last few decades have been pretty delightful.
Oh, gosh. Well, listen, we want to share some of your music. We want to play the Bandit Joaquin, which is just a great song. Love that. And when we come back, I want to talk about how you got started into music and maybe who some of your influences were. So let's take a listen to the Bandit Joaquin. We're talking with Dave Stamey, and you're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio.
From the broken hills of Mexico, where we took the horses we stole, to Sonora in California mines, where you gringos did for gold. Even north to the Oregon line, the story is the same. All your women, they tremble in fear at the mention of my name. I robbed the miner on the Coulterville Road. I leave his blood on the ground, like a mist through oak and digger pine. I move without a sound. Your finest horses belong to me. I take them as I please. I line my pockets with your gold, and I'm gone with the midnight breeze. I am the Bandit Joaquin. I live in the wild with the bear and wolverine. Over hill and valley, I fly as in a dream. I am the ghost. I am the fox. I am the Bandit Joaquin. There is no use to wonder why. My reasons are my own. The hatred I feel for the Anglo blood lies deep within my bones. My segundo is three-fingered Jack. He cuts off the Chinaman's ears and wears them like a necklace around his throat. He's a man who knows no fear. The fools up there who make your laws, they are lawyers, they are thieves. They want a devil they can blame, and walking is what they need. So I'm the ghost of El Dorado, but the blame is on their heads. At night when hoofbeats shake the ground, they tremble in their beds. I am the Bandit Joaquin. I live in the wild with the bear and wolverine. Over hill and valley, I fly as in a dream. I am the ghost. I am the the fox, I'm the bandit Joaquin. Captain Love and his ranger band, they said they took my head. The fools rode into a stranger's camp and they left the wrong man dead. And others say I never was, I am a dream of what could be. But even if I had never lived, you would have invented me. I am the bandit Joaquin. I live in the wild with the bear and wolverine. Over hill and valley, I fly as in a dream. I am the ghost, I am the fox, I am the bandit Joaquin. I am the ghost, I am the fox, I am the bandit Joaquin.
We're talking with Dave Stamey, and Dave, every time I listen to that song, it reminds me of the Anthony Hopkins and Antonio Banderas Zorro movie. Did you see that movie?
I think they came up. Yeah, I did, a long time ago. That's got Angelina Jolie in it.
Michael Douglas's wife. One of the most beautiful women. I can't think of her name right now. But,
she was in Chicago. That's right.
Yeah.
I did see that, and I think they came to the conclusion a long time ago that Zorro was actually based on the character of Joaquin, who was, if you go deep enough, was actually based on characters in English bandit novels of the 1840s and 1850s. That's an interesting conversation we could have. We could spend an hour on that just in and of itself.
We could.
Very, very. Yeah, we darn sure could. He was a bandit and he was a horse thief, but he wasn't as near as I can find in my research. The Robin Hood that he's been made out to be. Perhaps he was, but history, if you look deep enough, says no, he was actually the book that was written about in the life and times of the California bandit Joaquin Murrieta, which was published in the 1850s, was based very heavily on novels that were written in England and popular at the time. And pretty
right.
much the whole storyline came from that. But anyway, he's a legend, and that's why I said in the song there, if I hadn't ever lived, you would have invented me anyway. So, and that's what we do. That's what we do.
Well, it's a great song, and we do glamorize a lot of our Western characters more so than they should be. But that's part of our culture, and we kind of enjoy those legends. So, but a great song, and I'll tell you, talking about we could talk for a long time, and one of the things that a magazine that I enjoy tremendously is Cowboys and Indians, and unfortunately they're not a sponsor of the show, and we'd talk more about them. But there was you are featured quite often because you're one of the busiest guys in the Western music industry. And when there's something that's going on that's a great event, you're usually there. But there was a neat story about the, and I'll pronounce this wrong, but the Dude Ranch that you worked on, the Alisal?
Alisal, yeah. Uh-huh.
Alisal. There's quite a bit of history behind that ranch, and maybe we'll have to have you back on and talk about that sometime as well, since you spent as many years as you did there.
I would love to. That's a great, great ranch, and there's a lot of history there.
Yeah, that would be another show in itself. But talk to us a little bit about how you got started in the music. How'd you go from pleasant experiences with some of these horses to music?
Well, it came about through the horses, actually. Now, when I was a young man in my late teens and early 20s, I did the bar deal. I did the music in the nightclubs and so forth, because we're talking back in the mid-70s, and there really was no market for cowboy music, which is where my first love was and has always been in the Western field. It wasn't marketable. There wasn't anybody listening to it. And so I spent a number of years working in the nightclubs doing the country and country rock and so forth. And I finally got a belly full of it, and I walked away from it. I didn't pick up a guitar seriously for 10 years, probably.
Wow.
My first love has been, and always has been, writing. I'm a writer. That's what I do. And so I went kind of sideways and wandered off and tried to be the great American novelist. And that for various reasons didn't work out. All of which probably were self-inflicted, but ended up going back to work for some outfitters over in the Eastern Sierra. And at one point, my wife says, you know, you really should take your guitar along. You're going to be back up in those mountains, and these guests are going to need some entertainment. And I really didn't want to do it. Anyway, so they wore me down, and I finally did. I brought the guitar out and started singing around the campfire, and that is literally how I got started, singing around a campfire. And just sort of snowballed from there.
Well, I'm glad your wife convinced you to take the guitar. So kudos to her for that. And
I'm not so sure she's happy about it. I mean, look what I unleashed. No, she is.
I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure she'd rather have you there than have you on those Bronx that we were talking about. Did you have some influences in your music? Were there any people that particularly influenced you? I've had some young artists on lately, and it's exciting to see a lot of the young talent that's coming up in the Western music field. And frankly, several of those have mentioned you as being an influence on them.
That's scary.
Well, I think it's a pretty good role model to have.
Well, it's very flattering that somebody would say that. I don't take that lightly at all. It makes you know, when you hear something like that, you look around and go, "Golly, what am I doing here? I better shape up here. I better make sure I'm doing the best I can." If people are watching that close, my influences go back. The earliest influence would be Hank Williams, who was just huge in my life as a young kid. I got the Hank Williams bug when I was 12 or 13 years old, and at one point I think I could probably do the entire Hank Williams songbook. I was that deeply into it. The whole idea of being able to write a song and sing it yourself and not have to worry about anybody else just really appealed to me. There was also Burl Ives was a huge influence.
Yeah.
In the fact that I watched him one night do a concert, just him and a guitar, and then, you know, he controlled the whole evening and entertained these people by himself, and I thought, holy cow, now that's what I would like to do. I'd like to be able to do that. And and of course, then we can go on to Marty Robbins, who was an incredible role model and incredible influence. That I saw Marty live in 1977 at the Mid-State Fair in Paso Robles, California. It was Marty with his little band, and he had his background singer guy, and I think there was a total of maybe seven people on stage. There was no laser lights, no trapezes, no video screens, no smoke machines, nothing like that. Just Marty and his little band up there, and it's still the best show I ever saw in my life.
Yeah.
It was a watershed moment for me.
Well, it's strange that I'm just right here in Nashville. I've only been to the Grand Ole Opry once, and that was the final Saturday night in the old Ryman Auditorium. and Marty Robbins was performing that night, and then I ran into him a little bit later in the Pancake Pantry, later after the show was over. But just such a talented guy, gone way too soon, but such an influence on so many people. You know, our friend Don Edwards is a huge Marty Robbins fan and has done several of his songs.
Yes, he has.
We want to take a quick break, and we want to get another song in that you did, and that's one that's called 12 Mile Road. And our next guest is on the line, and I know that Marietta can hear us. I hope she's enjoying our conversation, but we want to play a couple more songs and visit with you for just a second. So, Marietta, hang on. We'll be back to visit in South Carolina in just a little bit. But, Dave, this is one called 12 Mile Road. Is this any story to this song?
Big story. This has to do with the ranch we had in Montana, in Yellowstone County, that because of various economic situations, we ended up losing, having to sell out and go on our way. I took my dad back up into that country 2 years ago. He went with me to do a couple of shows in Montana, and we actually got in the car and drove four hours east and to Yellowstone County and went to the old place. And we found it broke up, broke up into 20 and 30-acre ranchettes, which is a word I never thought I'd hear in eastern Montana. But such as it was. And they paved the road and put up a street sign. It's 12 Mile Road. I didn't know that was the name of the road, but even when I was living there, it was just the old gravel section line road. But it's a tribute to my dad and what he tried to accomplish out there.
All right. Well, let's listen to 12 Mile Road by Dave Stamey, and when we come back, we'll talk with Dave just a little bit more. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio.
There's an old gravel road following section line. Out where lives are held together with sweat and baling twine. Where you rattle your bones on a tractor over 30 years old, and there's a mortgage and kids to be fed out on 12 Mile Road. Just a stretch of country, the wind comes blowing through, homesteaders starved out and blew away. Nobody out here but you. You know someday it's gonna turn around. Lord, it turns so slow. It ain't rained since April out on 12 Mile Road. Out on 12 Mile Road. Lord, it turns so slow. Hanging on to a ragged dream. Out on 12 Mile Road. You raise some hay, a few head of cows. You swing a hammer in town. You do everything you can by God do to keep your feet on the ground. 'Cause if a man works hard enough, he can turn that straw into gold. Or ain't that the way it's supposed to be? Out on 12 Mile Road. Out on 12 Mile Road. Lord, it turns so slow. Hanging on to a ragged dream. Out on 12 Mile Road. Fences are untrue. All of your worries vanish like smoke. All the hard times are through. You'll look down from the top of a hill. Your dreams will be there to hold. Or ain't that the way it's supposed to be? 12-mile road. Out on 12-mile road, Lord, it turns so slow. Hanging on to a ragged dream. Out on 12-mile road. Out on 12-mile road, Lord, it turns so slow. It ain't rained since April.
Dave Stamey's 12 Mile Road, and Dave, that is a great song. Absolutely great song. You know, it's been a very, very quick half hour, and you're just a lot of fun to talk with. I mean, we could do a couple of more shows on different topics, and I hope that you'll come back and visit with us again.
It would be my pleasure, Gary. Absolutely, anytime.
Would love to have you. Again, you're one of the busiest guys I know in the business, and we want to tell folks where they can find you. So what's coming up in the next week?
Oh, my goodness. Let's see. I'm going to be in Acton, California on Sunday at the Whistle Stop Ranch. All of this information can be found at my website, www.stamey.com. Next Friday, we'll be at the Black Oak Casino in Tuolumne, California, with my friend Waddy Mitchell, who I have had the honor and privilege and pleasure of working with many, many times in the past. And the night after that, I'll be in Mount Ockham, California at a benefit for a therapeutic riding center. And the week after that, I'll be in Winfield, Kansas at the Walnut Valley Festival, and it's a wonderful, wonderful folk festival there, and I look forward to that every year. So that and other places on down the trail, they're all at the website. My schedule is there. Come see me.
All right. Well, check out DaveStamey.com and look at his tour schedule. Tremendous, tremendous artist. Just a super, super nice guy to talk with. And Dave, we need to get you back here a little further in the east. We need some venues out here to highlight our Western music.
I would love that. As I think George Carlin said, if you know, my plan is if you've got a zip code, I'm going to be there sooner or later.
All right, well, we've got a zip code. We'll have to see if we can't get you out here. But it's been a joy to talk with you, and we look forward to having you back again. And thanks so much for taking the time to visit with us today on Equestrian Legacy Radio. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Gary. It's been my pleasure.
All right, and we're going to play out this segment with Come Ride With Me by Dave Stamey. And when we come back, we're going to be talking with Marietta Gambrill in Pendleton, South Carolina. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio.
Come ride with me. It's time to saddle up right away. There's so much to see. Don't worry, I know the trails, I know the way. I called a gentle horse, his eyes are big and brown. He's ready to carry you the whole world around. Come ride with me, let's ride away. Come take a chance, I'll show you where the mountains touch the sky. It's a horseback dance, and we can ride forever if we try. A dream in the distance, there for you to chase. Out in the sunrise with the wind on your face. Come ride with me, let's ride away. And the smell of the leather, the sunlight on your skin, they've got us aching to begin. The rumble of hoofbeats much stronger than wine, the dust in your hair, the light in your eyes. Come ride with me, I will run the hills and watch the eagles soar. It's where you want to be, so tell me just what you're waiting for. With camp near the meadow, and we'll love the night away, and saddle up again when the dawn is turning gray. Come ride with me, let's ride away. The sunlight on your skin, they've got us aching to begin. The rumble of hoofbeats much stronger than wine. The dust in your hair, the light in your eyes. Come ride with me, we'll run the hills and watch the eagles soar. It's where you need to be, so tell me just what you're waiting for. I will camp near the meadow and love the night away, and saddle up again when the dawn is turning gray. Come ride with me, let's ride away. Come ride with me, come ride with me today. Come ride with me, come ride with me, come ride with me. Oh, come ride.
Well, Marietta Gambrill is a teacher, trainer, clinician, judge, and for over 60 years a dedicated horsewoman. And on Saturday, September the 20th at Clemson University's T. Ed Garrison Arena, Marietta will be honored with a celebration of the life and work of Marietta Gambrill, a South Carolina horsewoman. Marietta, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Gary. I appreciate you asking me.
Well, and going to enjoy visiting with you, and thanks for hanging on the line as long as you did. I hope you enjoyed our visit with Dave.
Oh, I enjoyed it very much. I just hope you aren't going to ask me to sing.
Well, now, a mutual friend of ours, Linda Starnes, you know Linda.
Yeah, oh,
Linda.
Yeah.
Linda actually has sung on the show once before, so.
Yeah,
we won't do that to you today. But, you know, there are a lot of your friends that I'm sure are listening to the show today because the Tennessee Walking Horse Breeders Association put out an email blast a while ago letting folks know you were going to be on the show. And so you're going to have a lot of folks that are looking forward to our conversation. But I'd like for us to start out, Marietta, talking a little bit about how you got started with horses.
Well, I got my family was not a horse family, and I got started with horses riding neighbors' horses. Had several neighbors that had horses, and some of them didn't ride them. Some just wanted my exercise, so I just started off riding neighbor horses. Excuse me. At age 14, I started working horses for people.
Well,
so
when did you get your first
horse? There.
Yeah, when did you get your first horse?
I got my first horse at age 14.
Okay.
It was a walking horse. No, excuse me. My first one was a saddlebred, standardbred cross.
All right.
I always told people that I never did break her. We just came to an understanding.
Well, I think a lot of us have had horses like that. But
yeah, my second horse was a walking horse.
Okay, all right. And how did you get her?
A cousin gave her to me that had her and needed to move her and knew I was one of the horse crazy girls in the country, and she gave her to me.
Oh, great. Well, did that get you started on training? How did you get started training horses? What age were you?
Hanging out at training barns, not just walking horse barns, quarter horse barns, saddlebred barns, all of them. And I started out training all breeds, not just walking horses. So that's where I got a lot of experience in your versatility things.
All right. Well, talk to us a little bit about those experiences. What did working with other breeds teach you that you were able to incorporate into the walking horses?
Well, mainly that a horse is a horse.
That's true.
You know, it doesn't matter what breed it is. You train them all the same way, more or less. Horses, it doesn't matter what breed they are as far as how they think or how they accept training. It's the same for all breeds. I couldn't separate them.
Right. Now, did you start out training while you were in school?
Yes. While I was in high school and went on through college, and I taught public school for 2 years, getting money to start my own barn. Up until then, I was just training two or three horses at a time.
Right.
And I taught physical education in public school for 2 years and then went training full-time.
Well, now, what was it that made you go from teaching to training horses?
Well, training the horses was always my ambition, but if you don't have the money to start, you've got to have some way to make money to get started until you are known by people.
Right.
Before they want to bring a horse to you. So that's what the teaching did.
All right. Well, it's interesting, Marietta, when you're talking about that. Do you know who Sheila Varian is?
I don't believe so.
Sheila is a legend in the Arabian horse world. And it's kind of interesting because Sheila was a horse-crazy young lady. And she went on through school, and she started teaching physical education. And then went into Varian Arabians, which has become a legend in the Arabian world. And it's pretty interesting that the two of you have that commonality there.
Right.
Yeah, it's
yes,
pretty
it is.
Interesting. Pretty interesting. So did you go straight into training walking horses after you finished teaching?
No, I trained all breeds. I had a training barn in Greenville, South Carolina for 3 or 4 years. Trained all breeds over there, even trained a standard bred racehorse, which went on to race and was very successful. I was training walking horses for the Major family, the Harold Major family.
Right.
And they built a barn on their place and taught me to move into Anderson and working their horses. And so I did that, and at that point, I switched to training mostly walking horses. I would have another horse every once in a while. But that was the point that I started training mostly walking horses.
Okay. And were you always in the pleasure end of things with the walking horses?
Well, back then, there were no pleasure shows, and if you went to a show, they would have one pleasure class.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I trained padded and pleasure and showed both.
Okay.
As the pleasure horses grew and started having their own shows and so forth, I went completely to pleasure horses.
Well, how did the interest in versatility come about for you?
That probably came back from when I was working the quarter horses and so forth, because I did reining and trail and all of that with them, and you know, people didn't do it with walking horses for a long time. They didn't think you could do it with walking horses.
Right.
I know I had someone tell me one time that you couldn't put a Western saddle on a walking horse.
Well, I know as a kid growing up, if we had a saddle, it was usually a Western saddle. So we kind of grew up with a Western saddle, and
yeah, I did too.
Yeah, and a lot of people said, well, if you gallop your walking horse, you'll just ruin their gaits, and that wasn't true either. So that was
no, it wasn't.
That was another myth that has been
yeah.
dispelled. But you were very active for a number of years with the Tennessee Walking Horse Breeders Association. I think, if I have my figures correct, you were a director for about, what, 26 years?
I think that's right. Yes.
And
on the executive board for about 8 years.
Served on the executive committee for 8 years. And talk to us a little bit about how you got the, because I know you were very instrumental in starting the versatility program for the walking horse breed.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think most of the credit for the versatility program goes to Sis Osborne that worked for the Breeders Association then.
Right.
She really pushed that and worked a lot with me and several other people to get that program started and to keep it going. I think we owe a lot to her for her work, much of it on her own time to get that program started.
Well, Sis was very active and very active in versatility and in the trail programs as well. But how did the versatility program come about?
Gosh, you're taking me way back there now. Well, as I remember, we started just talking about it in the pleasure meetings and started off with a few of, and I don't remember what were the first classes that were put in for versatility. We didn't start with all of them. And for the life of me, I can't remember what it started with, but it grew into all of the classes, all of the versatility classes.
Okay. All right, well, we're gonna take just a real quick break. I thought about you this morning while I was getting this program ready and selecting some music to play, and you kind of remind me of a lot of us, and our involvement all came about with horses because of this love of horses.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And so we're going to listen to This Love of Horses by Mary Ann Kennedy. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and when we come back, we're going to talk more with Marietta Gambrill.
Love them from the start. They're in my veins, run in my blood. And if I live to be 100, I'll never get enough. They fill our days, they grace our lives. Are links on the same chain. The kindred spirit is everywhere. This love of horses that we share. Some pinto, some sorrows, the ponies, the pasos, palominos, they're in my dreams, they keep me smiling.
And I want to wish Marianne a happy birthday. She had one yesterday, and so one of our favorite guests and a great entertainer, Marianne Kennedy's This Love of Horses. But Marianne, let's talk a little bit about maybe some of, you know, we've all had favorite horses, I think, maybe horses that have been special in our lives. And I know that you had a couple of Supreme Versatility champions over the years. So
Let me say this before we do that, though. That, you know, the versatility program really took off with the start of the World Versatility Show. People from all over the country realized that they could come and compete not just with the padded horse but with the versatility horse. And that really started off the program. These people came because of the love of the horse and the love
right.
of what they did with them, not because of the money, because if you won first place, you still didn't make any money.
Right.
So, but anyway, back to what did you ask me now?
Well, some of your favorite horses, some of the horses that you won World Versatility Championships with, Supreme Championships with.
World's Girl was my first one. She was a favorite of mine. I showed her in English and Western Pleasure and most of the versatility classes. Whips Wayward Lass was my second Supreme Champion. She was a favorite of mine. They were a completely different type horse. World's Girl was better in the versatility than in the the pleasure. And Whips
uh-huh.
Wayward Lass was better in the pleasure than in the versatility classes. So they both had their own specialty there.
Right, right. I was just going to ask, is there anything that if a person is selecting a horse to compete in versatility with, is there a particular type of horse that maybe does better?
Well, you want an athletic horse, of course. It's nice if the horse has a lot of natural gait rather than, say, pacing or trotting.
Right,
because you can keep working that gait while you are working in your versatility classes. Although Whips Wayward Lass is kind of a long back horse, I really prefer a short back horse for versatility events. I think they're just easier to work, a little more athletic. In cantering, they're a little easier to switch to teach the lead change. But like I say, Whips Wayward Lass was long-backed, and she did fine.
Right, right, right. Well, I've talked with different people that compete in different type of events, and we talked with Tracy Pinson. You know, Tracy competes with her walking horses in the Extreme Cowboy races. You know, I guess disposition and personality probably has something to do with a horse that might be well-suited for some of the versatility programs.
Oh, yes, very much so. Very much so. You don't want a horse that's real hyped up, and you want kind of a laid-back horse that can accept doing all these different things without getting wired up.
Right. There's an exciting event that's coming up in October in Oklahoma City, and that's called the American Cowgirls Challenge. And in that particular event, the horses will be competing at Liberty in cowboy dressage and also in the extreme cowboy racing, which they call kind of a ranch versatility type program. And I had another young lady from the Carolinas that was on last week that we talked with. She works with a Mustang. And I asked her, Mary Miller Jordan is her name. And I said, Mary, is there a particular discipline, one of those events that you're more concerned about? And she said, probably the extreme cowboy race, because the Mustang that she uses just sees boogers everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so she does real well at Liberty, and the dressage has been fine, but she's really working hard with a horse to get ready for the extreme cowboy race. Is there a particular event or discipline in versatility that is your favorite?
I think trail obstacles my favorite. I just enjoy the companionship, I guess, of the horse and the rider. They really have to work together and understand each other to be a real success, and I think that's real important.
How much time does it take for a person to spend in the saddle with a horse to really excel at versatility?
A lot to be a real good success. Just the trail obstacle. You spend a lot of times just sitting on your horse at all the obstacles.
Right.
You know, you do one movement, sit, do another movement, sit. If you just rush through them, then they start anticipating. So just that one event takes hours. The more events you work them in, the more time it takes.
Well, it's interesting. We, the World Versatility Show just took place back in August.
Right.
And we did interviews with several of the competitors that were there during the first day of the event. We had a sweet young lady that was on. I think she was about 12 years old. And I said, how much time do you spend with your horse? And she said, I ride about 2 hours or more every afternoon after school.
Mm-hmm.
And just a lot of time in the saddle. Just a lot of time in the saddle.
It is. It's not something you learn from a book. It's not something somebody can tell you. They can say tell you the methods, but they can't tell you. They can't teach you how to do it talking to you. It's you and the horse. You have to understand each other and work together.
Well, is there a particular event, something in your past, because you've participated in a lot of different things representing the walking horse. Is there a particular event that maybe stands out in your mind that was more special, that you enjoyed more? Or?
You mean in the show ring or anything?
Well, in anything, because I know that you represented the walking horse in the Pegasus activities. You've been involved in some of the Olympic activities, I think, with walking horses.
Right.
Anything that was particularly special to you or memorable?
Yeah, the Pegasus parade was a real honor, but it was rather frustrating. You can imagine, lining up in a area like that. And, of course, they had the walking horses lining up under a railroad trestle with a trestle.
Oh, wow.
With the train going overhead.
Well, that could be
frustrating.
That could be a new versatility event, I guess.
That's right. I enjoyed the Olympic parade out from Atlanta. Rode a horse in it. I enjoyed going to Germany and representing the Tennessee Walk Horse Breeding Exhibit Association over there. Fitz Osborne and I went over there for 4 days and kind of did a mini clinic and had a booth and talked to the people there. that was kind of a special event for me.
Well, and that was I guess. Go ahead.
Yeah, I always enjoy judging. The pleasure classes and the versatility classes, I really enjoy judging them.
The equine horse affair in Germany.
Yes.
How was that different from events here in the States? Or was it?
Well, not a lot. I mean, you know, the same type thing. Everyone had booths, you know, advertising the breed booths, the feed booths. They had different breeds there, and they had the parade of breeds, and then they'd have an exhibition by different breeds. And the odd thing is, I can't think of the breed now. They were actually doing more of a walk than our walking horses were in the exhibition.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same type thing. Right.
Just different language.
Right. Well, of course, we have a pretty active group over in Germany now with the walking horses. A lot of really nice folks in Germany and in Poland and the Netherlands. And
right.
Just it's amazing how the horse world is such a small world.
Yes, it is.
If you were going to give advice to somebody today that was going to get started in a career with horses, because you've had a great career, a long career with horses, what would that advice be?
I guess decide what breed you wanted to work with.
Yeah.
Or are you talking about just walking horses?
They're just any horse activity. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you probably, nowadays, you probably have to work mainly with one breed. You know, back when I started, you had horse shows, and they had the quarter horses, the saddlebreds, the walking horse, everything at one show. But nowadays, each breed has their own show.
Right.
So you almost have to stay with one breed to be a success, because you can't go to all the different shows. So I say pick the breed and pick the divisions you want to specialize in and work toward that. Of course, I always say the pleasure division and versatility because that's my favorite.
Right.
But it may not
right.
be everyone's favorite.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure today there are challenges that come with trying to start a career in the horse business versus what it was a few years ago. But you've had a great career. And what are your activities today?
Well, I'm just kind of inactive as far as showing goes. I've got a 200-acre farm, and I have horses and goats. Still have my walking horses, of course. Have two stallions. Didn't breed any mares last year because of the prices down so on foals. You know, I think the answer is for all of us to quit breeding for 2 years and see if that doesn't bring the price up, but that's not going to happen.
Well, probably not, but supply and demand does have a big influence on prices. So
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think just the natural course of things, there are fewer mares being bred today in all breeds than there were several years ago. So, well, again, you've had a great career. It's quite an honor that they're bestowing on you, and that's again, that is September the 20th, and that's at Clemson University's T. Ed Garrison Arena. It's going to be a celebration of the life and work of Marietta Gambrill, and I thought it was really cool because it was followed by South Carolina Horsemen. And so you've been a great example and influence on horses of all breeds in the state of South Carolina and across the country. And we wish you great success for years to come in influencing
people. Well, thank you.
So, and really appreciate having you spend time with us today on the show. So,
I appreciate you asking me.
Well, I look forward to talking with you. And one of these days, I hope we meet up somewhere on the trail or on the rail.
Yes, definitely.
All right. So, Marietta,
have to make a trip down here, or either I'll have to make a trip to Tennessee to see you.
There you go. But look forward to meeting you sometime. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. We've had a fun time talking today with Marietta Gambrill in Pendleton, South Carolina, and thoroughly enjoyed visiting with Dave Stamey. Super, super nice people, and we hope you've enjoyed the show. We want to mention a couple of things that are coming up. Our Tuesday show, Equestrian Legacy Radio, Saddle Up America, is moving to a new time on Tuesdays, and that will be at noon Central Standard Time. And that begins this coming Tuesday, and we have Robert Eversole that's joining us, the Trailmeister. So we'll be talking trail riding on Tuesday on Saddle Up America. And then this coming Thursday on Equestrian Legacy Radio Show, we are having a very special show, and we hope you'll be able to join us for that. That's Equestrian Legacy Radio's A Salute to America, My Country Under God. We have some very special guests that are joining us. R.W. Hampton will be with us, Craig Cameron, Jim Hutchins, who has a Warrior Family Retreat program in Washington, Matt Luttrell, who is doing the long ride home to raise money for our military men and women, and then Sam Hubbard, who is just completing his One Nation ride. So I think it's going to be a great show. It's our salute to our servicemen and women on September the 11th, and that's next Thursday. So be sure and tune in for that show. I think you'll really enjoy that. We remind you about our Legacy Club, and that is a free club we have as a thank you to our listeners. Go to equestrianlegacy.net, and you can enroll in that. We have great sponsors for our Legacy Club, and they offer great discounts. We have a monthly and a year-end drawing for some super prizes just because of your enrollment in the Legacy Club. So we encourage you to do that. Again, we hope you've enjoyed the show. We've enjoyed talking with our guest. And we remind you, as always, if you climb in the saddle, get ready for the ride. Thanks for listening.
Care.